about zombies is, well, first of all, the obvious. We're talking literally about walking corpses, dead people who have come back to life and who want to eat us. If you talk about the most popular zombie lore, you're talking about the recently dead. We're not talking about skeletons jumping out of a coffin, but the recently deceased whose bodies are intact enough that when they reanimate, they are able to be mobile and to pose a physical threat to people. The only way to deactivate them is by destroying or incapacitating the brain. Otherwise, these reanimated corpses will seek warm-blooded and living creatures to attack and consume. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, what are zombies really? Well, they are clearly a metaphor for our fears. Our fears of death, something historically that we've explored in so much fiction and literature and then film, this idea that we are terrified of dying and we have this apprehension of this short lifespan that we have on this mortal coil, and so we fight death as much as possible, and that becomes analogous to what happens with zombies in the sense that we are fighting death. We are literally fighting death, but we're also fighting to stay alive, which are two different ways of looking at that fear of moving on. Specifically with zombies today, we're talking also about the fear of disease, the communicable transmission of any number of infectious diseases that we fear can be widespread, that could lead up to and including the extinction of our species. So we're talking pandemic, we're talking nuclear fears of war and fallout, radiation, Chernobyl. But with zombies, we're also talking about mindless consumption and consumerism. The shambling corpses in the original Dawn of the Dead flocking to a shopping mall was a pretty apt analogy then as a kind of foreshadowing, because it's the truth now. Of course, instead of flocking to a shopping mall, we're all sitting staring dead-eyed into a phone, still buying the same amount, still consuming. But another aspect of zombies is that we are talking about evolution or revolution. The idea that a new group, a new culture, a new population is suddenly upon us and will literally eliminate us and replace us. One of my favorite and probably most accurate deconstructions of what zombie lore means to us today is the meaning of the term the Walking Dead, something that before the Walking Dead, George Romero clearly laid out in his films, of the idea that we are pretending to be alive. But isn't that what the dead are doing? They seem like they're pretending to be alive. And in our confronting of this fear, we want so much to make things the way they were again and live our normal, expected, predictable, even stagnant lives. So the question's been asked in The Walking Dead, who is that title referring to? Our shambling antagonists or our struggling protagonists? But I digress. We're getting a little deep here. Supposed to be talking about zombies, right? And if you're listening to this, it's likely that you watch The Walking Dead or even fear The Walking Dead, and clearly, you know all this already. So I'm sorry if this has been repetitive on this topic, but I'd like to dig a little bit deeper in a different direction on this topic of zombies. And I really want to pick your brains. If you know that 35-year-old reference that I just made, then you might be as nerdy about horror as me. And if so, you might also get where I'm actually headed with this. So first, let's get over the contradiction about the living dead. Dead people cannot be alive. Putting the two words together, living, dead, does not make any sense at all. It's like saying the running walk. It's like the sitting jump. I guess you could sit and jump. It's like the black white. I don't know. Think of a couple opposites, put them together, and it would be something equivalent to the living dead. Now, if we approach this logically, the way all of our characters do when they first realize that this is happening, there's a couple things that really have to be established first. The ground rules. If they're alive or reanimated, there has to be some kind of scientific basis for that rather than supernatural. We're not going to assume that they're possessed by some evil spirit, although that could be a theory, but let's keep is grounded in something logical that leans towards scientific, because it would be easy to write off stuff as supernatural or magic, and it's done quite frequently, and that's no fun. But if we accept the magic bean in this scenario without being able to explain so much of it, then maybe we can continue. Because really, these stories, it's not about the zombies, and that's consistently been pointed out throughout the history of this genre. It's about the people, the living, not the dead, and their behavior versus the actual monsters. That's kind of the fun literal aspect of it. But really, it's about what our heroes do in the face of death, literally and figuratively speaking. But see, I need to stress the importance of rules laws and the reality in which we tell these stories, particularly shows like The Walking Dead and the spinoff Fear the Walking Dead and whatever comes after that, because it doesn't seem like it's going to stop at this point. There are a couple aspects, though, about this film genre that warrant some questioning, and rightfully so. And I'm about to tackle them right now. First of all, could zombies ever run? It's called The Walking Dead, not The Running Dead, but if you think of this genre as a whole, that has been inconsistent and should be pointed out, because a lot of people seem to associate zombies all together in one big mishmash of what that metaphor is and what literally is being presented on the screen, and certain things really, really contradict that firm foundation of what this whole monster is to us. So when you think about zombies running, for me, it takes that magic bean and it really squashes it, because you had me until that point. When you run, don't you generate BTUs of heat? That seems natural to assume that, and from a scientific and physical perspective, I don't know that you can have running without that. Your muscles require oxygen and blood flow, and if the zombies are falling apart and yet they're so aggressive and so energetic that they can run, that seems to work against the narrative and it works against the metaphor. Why would they be more agile in death than in life? I've seen a couple films where these zombies are booking. They are sprinting. And some of them look like they're not physically capable of doing that when they were alive. In any case, if we're saying that these are dead and reanimated and they're stiff and rigor mortis is setting in, then how can they run? There has to be some kind of cellular activity that really implies some kind of growth and strength and adrenaline and all these things about a living nervous system that just aren't in a dead body, even a reanimated one. So it makes more sense, I think, that they would move slower. And in any case, if you're writing this, at the very least, running takes focus and concentration to maintain the balance of actually doing that. I don't have to explain how we learn to crawl and then to walk and then eventually to run, and how the period leading up to that is very uncoordinated and very weak. So if zombies' mental capabilities have to match their physical capabilities, then it would seem to make sense that they would be slower and maybe not so coordinated. Now, changing this aspect in the genre is, of course, the creative liberty of any writers who want to jump into it. And if people want to see it, then they want to see it. And I love different takes on this genre. Before the internet and before these shows came about, in that rift between all of these very popular movies of the 70s and 80s and even 90s, for fans like myself, there was a lot of zombie fiction out there. And this fertile storytelling playground was explored in writing versus on the screen, with a lot of scenarios that hadn't been heard previously, but they never changed the rules. Because when you change those rules that initially were set by George Romero in Night of the Living Dead, it messes with the orchestration that was set in play that was very, very solid. So the whole running issue, to me, was very disappointing and confusing when I watched the remake of Dawn of the Dead in 2004. I thought to myself, wow, these zombies are so fast and so agile. That takes me out of this narrative completely, because how? Why? Yeah, you could say, how are they alive in the first place? But I think that mystery should stay consistent and not get a little bit too far flung. I've seen a couple films where the zombies are literally like acrobats, jumping and flipping, and at that point, I'm done. I always thought to myself, okay, if I want to approach this scenario somewhat seriously, then what kind of things do I think of? Well, I don't really think of any cool scenarios, because most of those have already been done with running zombies, but then I immediately think, what if it was winter? How do these zombies fare, and what kind of story would be told about running zombies, but somewhere up north, where there's plenty of snow and ice? That would be pretty comical to see hundreds of zombies sprinting their asses off across an icy parking lot and just wiping out constantly. Just like a bunch of beginner ice skaters just barreling out onto the ice and trying to go as fast as they could. That's all I could really think of, because it was so apart from what made any sense. I think that's on the responsibility of the writer. Max Brooks has done the best so far of trying to make sense of all this stuff in his book, World War Z. The book, mind you, not the movie, which had, quite frankly, nothing to do with the book. But it's working with the mythology that's been set out without changing some fundamental aspects of it. Because when you change these things, they become tropes in the genre, which, for better or for worse, become stuck in everyone's minds. Speaking of minds, you remember when I said brains? Again, if you recognize that reference, you're old like me. But If you don't, let me explain. In 1985, there was a film called Return of the Living Dead, and this film, written by Dan O'Bannon, who also co-wrote Alien, took, at the time, what was cemented as a trilogy of Living Dead films by George Romero. Night of the Living Dead, 1968, Dawn of the Dead in 1978, Day of the Dead, also in 1985, that quite honestly, if you watch that trilogy, you will have seen every single episode of The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, and any other zombie movie that stays true to the lore. These three films touch on every topic and cover every mode of thought regarding this fictional world and serves as the basis for anything to come after. It's definitive. And of course, coming from the guy who made it all up, that makes sense. But in the same year that his last film of this trilogy came out, this Return of the Living Dead came out, which was somewhat of a spin-off, because in the film, they actually reference Night of the Living Dead as a film, as a movie. And they talk about the movie, and the storyline spins off of the film in saying things like it was based on actual events. And so then Return of the Living Dead spirals off into its own branch of the mythology, referencing zombie films. But in referencing it, a few of these fundamental aspects were changed, namely that not only do they run, but they talk. And when they talk, what do they say? They say brains, because apparently they don't want to just eat you, they want to eat your brains. There's a very famous scene in the film where a character is talking to a corpse, strapped to a gurney, half a body, almost skeletal, this corpse, and he says, "Why do you eat people?" And the corpse replies, "Not people, brains." And he asks, "Why?" And she says, "The pain. It makes the pain go away." Okay, so on the page, I kind of get this, but that's where it stops. Because number one, why brains? The connection of brains to the original ties to how we stop these reanimated corpses, but the fact that they want to eat that, I didn't get. I mean, in the first place, how does the corpse figure that out when they wake up? Aside from being hungry, how did they figure out that they want brains? And then when they get to somebody, the whole movie, and actually all of the Return of the Living Dead films, because there were several sequels, have these zombies biting through skulls. How is that even a thing? They're running, they're talking, which means they're thinking and they're coherent, and then they're biting through our heads without breaking teeth. I don't know. From this point on, in 1985, zombies became synonymous with comedy, because ultimately that's what it resulted in. It became absurd. Yeah, so they're alive, so they might as well run, and they might as well talk, and they might as well eat brains. Can I point out that this scene where this guy's talking to this half corpse of a woman in her very eloquent explanation and the amazing practical effects and puppeteering by the special effects department, this zombie had no lips. It was skeletal. How do you say the words, the pain of being dead, which is the exact line? How do you say that when you don't have lips? Try it right now. You're not going to be very successful. I promise. Or hold on. That's what "I promise" sounds like without lips. So not until 28 days later in 2002 were we reminded of how terrifying they actually are. But of course, other zombie nerds of a different sort would say, "No, they're not dead. They're infected." In any case, it is a zombie movie because it falls into that genre. It follows the same basic premise and storyline and tropes. And that film definitely re-energized, quote, the genre, with rage fueling the running and aggression. That made a little bit more sense. And I think Danny Boyle tackled it really well in that first film. And the second film was equally, and actually possibly even more awesome in taking that to the next level. Of course, a couple years later, the remake of Dawn of the Dead clearly took this cue, and just like the way MTV cutting and editing style of videos and content shifted the way we watch media, Zack Snyder and the filmmakers of Dawn of the Dead in 2004 took that idea and literally ran with it, because the zombies, of course, are sprinting like track runners in that film. It kind of highlights a pivotal point in history that I used to elaborate on in my film classes, which is that with the MTV generation, the cuts got shorter and shorter and shorter, to the point where we're seeing so much rapid-fire succession of imagery that our brain has to try and keep up. Whereas prior to that, we had longer cuts where we had to think about the composition and think about what we were looking at. It's the slow burn versus the jump scare. And quite frankly, horror films prior to this generation of fast cutting really relied on the suspense of those long, slow shots. And I think that's the difference between the zombie genre as it was established and the zombie genre as it had become. There's just this lack of buildup in the psychological fear. But okay, let's say we agree that on how zombies should act. When you watch these shows, think about The Walking Dead. We've had 9+ seasons, and Fear the Walking Dead in its 5th season, and just so many films. There are things that I've noticed consistently that are now becoming part of that departure in a way that is almost telling me that, okay, I think we're approaching done with this genre, because if I'm paying attention to this, then so are other people, and it's becoming a little bit played out. Because one of the things I'm seeing now when I see hordes of zombies, first of all, it's amazing, and it's great to see this imagery and that terror that it instills, and the visualization of the downfall of society and all that fun stuff we love about the apocalypse. But then I start asking questions like, what about equal opportunity? I'm talking about the zombies here. You know, The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead are consistent in their decay level of the dead, given the timelines of the show. Okay, so this is a year after this all happens, so this is how rotten they should be. And they're good at thinking about that stuff, especially Greg Nicotero, who is, by the way, from the George Romero family, having worked on Day of the Dead and being close with the likes of Tom Savini and George Romero. But first, I'm just talking visually about our zombies. Let's start with their clothing. I preface this by saying that as a filmmaker, there are certain production design rules that kind of have to be followed. So please take these next items with a grain of salt. Because I understand, it's much nicer to see an undistracting horde where everyone kind of matches each other. But come on. If you saw a horde of zombies, how do we not see a single shirt without any writing or text on it, or logos? No one's wearing any funny t-shirts with catchphrases and bumper sticker type humor. I see that every day. Now, yeah, everything would be getting all dirty, but it seems like all the color palettes are still the same for all the clothes that all the characters wear, including the zombies. It's like suddenly in the apocalypse, bright colors and neon suddenly stopped existing, when we have so many of those colors in our clothes and in our fashion. Somehow they've disappeared, and you can't say that it's all gotten dirty. But if we agree on that, or we stop arguing about that, then why is everyone wearing long sleeves or button shirts? I mean, unless all of these zombies were transported from the 90s, these plaid button shirt and cardigan wearing zombies apparently are the entire population of dead people in these shows. Moving beyond clothing, what about physical characteristics? And of course, casting directors would probably want to slap me. I'll admit that it's tricky to acknowledge diversity in the undead world, because if the characters are so diverse, we've seen every kind of character, every walk of life, why don't we see that in the dead as well? I mean, do we see an equal amount of race representation? Not that we have to, but it seems very consistently segmented. It's weird to think about having to be inclusive about zombies on a show, but it's a weird question that comes up, right? Or even more simply, what about body types? I mean, once in a while you see someone really big, and of course, you see all these emaciated zombies, but in real life, I think we have a much wider range, no pun intended, of folks out there who, if they're included in the main population, would come back to life as well. How come we don't see any children or elderly? Again, from a filmmaking perspective, I get it. I know why they didn't cast these people, but I can't help but think that when I'm in public and there's a lot of people, I take a look around and go, okay, so this would be the population segment that I would encounter in an undead world. And this is what all the people would look like. Old, young, big, small, tall, short. They seem a little bit too consistent in these shows. Now, these are the most obvious things to point out about zombies, but what about the people? What about the protagonists? Because we've also gotten to a point where things have to be questioned about them as well. When you look at a hero from an apocalyptic or catastrophic event, look at their appearance over 24 hours. So let's say a disaster movie or something that takes place over about a day. By the end of it, our hero looks pretty haggard. Your Tom Cruises, your action heroes, after a day's worth of craziness and explosions and fighting and killing, they look pretty rough. Most of the time, they resemble disaster victims in real life. After going through something extremely traumatic, immediately they look far worse for the wear. But if you look at hurricane victims and survivors of acts of God and other catastrophes, they look like disaster victims, and you can see that. Wouldn't all of our characters in these shows look like that as well? Why does everyone have the best tailored outfits that also seem to match the rest of their group? I'm not talking about like a biker gang, but not coincidentally, everyone seems to complement each other fashion-wise. But in real life, wouldn't you be finding what's available and what fits? You don't have laundry to change your clothes and wash them, so you're going to be on the road and you're going to be finding things to wear. And you're going to be ditching what you just wore. You're going to be covered in not just sweat and things from your own body, it's going to be covered in blood and gore. You're going to be changing all the time, and you're going to be wearing a lot of different clothes that most of the time probably won't fit. But okay, let's say, fine, they found outfits, they found, I don't know, they found a Walmart, and they each have a stockpile of these clothes that fit. Fine, let's just change one part of that. Let's just change their shoes. In the apocalypse, you're running, you are traveling a lot, and it's likely that you would be wearing footwear that would help support this goal of getting away from hordes of the undead. Why isn't anyone wearing sneakers? Why is no one wearing a running shoe? Everyone is wearing some kind of brandless and very stylish footwear, be it some kind of combat boots or cowboy boots. Imagine Rick Grimes wearing a pair of Reeboks. Just do that right now. Imagine some poster pose of him, but replace those boots with a pair of white sneakers. How does that change your perception of our hero, of this guy who leads this living revolution against the dead, and he's wearing sneakers? Or what if Michonne, swinging that katana, is wearing a pair of New Balance? They're like purple. Does that change your perception of her? What about hygiene? I think this is a question that's probably asked more often about, and we're not talking about once they've settled into a community or they've built some kind of stronghold where they have access to showers and clean water. Let's look at the first couple seasons and think of how bad they must have smelled. If you've ever been close to someone who is living their life on the road, i.e. without a home, you understand that there's a certain aura about them that really engages your senses, to put it delicately. It certainly doesn't engage the senses delicately. But okay, let's say they have a regimen that we can't detect. These are the parts that we don't see when they take care of themselves and they go to the bathroom. Okay, but what about just the hair? Now, mind you, I shaved my head every 5 days for 20 plus years. I know how fast hair grows. I firmly understand this concept. And of course, the majority of men who shave every single day also understand this. But how can everyone in the Walking Dead universe in these films over these long periods of time be so well groomed? Again, we're not talking about after a community has been set up and after they're already safe, but I would think that generally speaking, all of the men would have long hair and beards. Period. That would just be the thing, because no one would be shaving every day. And yet, watch some of these episodes and realize how clean shaven everyone is. Like, clean shaven. Especially look at the people who have bald heads and go, when are you trimming that sucker up? So no, we wouldn't all be clean shaven. There would be little to no upkeep because you're just trying to survive. I think about the Wild West and kind of the frontier days and that very dirty and hairy appearance that it feels like a lot of frontier folk had. Now, did I give you reasons not to watch these films or shows? Hopefully not. This was really just a fun poke at a mythology that ultimately is stronger because of its flaws. The fun part of asking these questions is that there is no answer, just like there's no answer for why the dead walk. And the irony is that the important part of asking versus getting the answer is what becomes the downfall of some characters in these stories. People who ultimately don't make it in that world are too hung up on the answers. So I'm content not answering the questions. And I'm just as content with this genre that I've been watching all my life. Because if we can't laugh at it, then we're not having fun. And if you don't have fun watching zombies, then why do it? If you're listening to this and you haven't seen the zombie movie, well, why don't you? In the quote, immortal words of Dr. Seuss, if you never did, you should. These things are fun, and fun is good. But speaking of immortality, I shouldn't neglect to add that the great George Romero said, "The dead can't run, their ankles would break."